We're going to start with number one. I don't know, what was so special about that? Don't we always start from number one? In other words, we're starting at the beginning. Number one is a quotation from the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam. Maimonides, the Rambam, wrote a Sefer HaMitzvot. The Sefer HaMitzvot is divided into three parts. The first part are 14 points that the Rambam says are the criteria by which we decide what is called a mitzvah and what should be included in the 613. Then he gives the 248 positive commandments, the 365 negative commandments. We're going to take a look at negative commandment number 290. That's what number one is. And what it's talking about is a judge has no right to make a decision until such time that there are two eyewitnesses who will testify. We were there, we saw the crime take place, we warned the criminal in advance of his having committed the crime. So the Rambam, in his description of this number 290, Ubemichilto Amru, the Medrash called the Michilto says, listen to this, listen to this. Ra'u rodeif acha chavero lehorgo. We see Reuven, we don't use A, B, C, we use Reuven and Shimon. If Reuven is pursuing Shimon to kill him, and Reuven is brandishing a big shiny sword, Ra'u rodeif acha chavero, they saw Reuven pursuing his colleague, not such a good friend, Lahargo, he wants to kill him. Vehitrubo, and they warned Reuven, Reuven, don't do it. Vaamru, and the witnesses said to Reuven, Yisraelhu, he's a Jew, he's Ben Brit, he's part of our people. Im harakto to tehareg. If you kill him, you will be put to death. And then what happened? For a brief moment, he'elimu einehem. They turned aside, and for a few moments, they didn't see what took place. Umitzo'u horug, and they find Shimon has been stabbed to death. Umefarper, he's in his last gasping breaths. V'hasayif menatev dam, and Reuven's sword is dripping with blood. Miyad ha'horeg, Reuven has the dripping, bloody sword in his hand, and there is Shimon lying on the ground, dying of a wound from the sword. Shomea ani yehei chayev. So what do I hear from this? What would we all say? Reuven is the murderer. Reuven, of course, is the murderer. But that's not how Torah looks at it. Absolutely not. Talmud Lomer, it says, v'noki v'tzadik al tahrog, the one who is innocent and is righteous, do not kill him. As long as you haven't seen it with your own eyes, that man is innocent. The fellow with the sword dripping with blood and Shimon down on the ground, Torah says, no. Now the Rambam wants to explain what's the reason for that? How does this make sense? V'lo tarchik zeh. Don't say that this is distant. It's a far-out thing. V'tipole mizeh. And don't wonder about this. V'tipole mizeh hadin. And you're going to wonder, what kind of a law is this? So he explains the following. Ki hadvarim ha'efshoriyim, things that are possible. Mehem krovei ha'efshorut, umehem rechokei ha'efshorut. Things that are possible can be probable and not so probable. Something can be possible, but it doesn't necessarily have to be probable. In other words, it could really be, it could be a little bit be, it could be a lot be. Umehem emtsoyim. So in other words, there are those possibilities in the middle. Like, one thing is, it's too far out to assume that this happened. Pretty probable that it happened. Between the pretty probable and the highly unlikely, there's a whole big area over there, and there are different levels of probability, different levels of not so likely, unlikely. So the Rambam says, you know what Torah did? Torah said the following. If we are going to leave open the possibility that we can paskin something, we can decide on the basis of the probable, and of course that will mean something that's very probable, chances are from very probable will become less probable, and then less and less probable. And before you know it, we will end up paskining things on the basis of something that's very far. So the Torah decided we're not leaving open any possibility of paskining on the basis of an assumption, even if it seems to be such a clear, clear assumption. It's so clear. No. Very important statement the Rama is making. Watch. Umehem, there are those that are emtsoyim bein ze leze, those that are someplace in the middle between the highly probable to the highly unprobable. Vela efshar, and to that which is probable, rochav godol, there's a great big wide expanse of area in which there is probability. So you know what the Torah did? V'ilu, ilu hitira Torah, would the Torah have permitted lachtor dinei nefashos to decide capital cases be'efshar hakorav miyod on the basis of, well, this is very probable that Reuven, he's the killer. It's so probable. Would the Torah have permitted that? The ilui tira Torah, would the Torah permitted lachtoch to decide dinei nefashos, matters of capital punishment, be'efshar hakorav mod, by that which is possible or very probable, that's close. She'efshar shia korov mehametziyut, and it can be that close that it's something similar to what we set up over here. Reuven pursuing Shimon to kill him. Reuven has a big sword in his hand. Reuven has been warned, don't kill him. And then for a few moments we didn't see anything. Maybe they went into a room. And then we come into the room and there's Shimon lying either dying or dead, and Reuven is standing over him with a bloody sword. No good. Torah says, no good. If Torah would have permitted that the very probable can be accepted, we've breached the wall of evidence. The next Beis Din is going to put somebody to death because of something less probable than this. And before you know it, another Beis Din someplace will do a little bit less probable. before you know it, you're going to have innocent people being put to death. So Torah made it clear. This is the way it is. By the way, if you wonder about it, remember, we have to believe, we believe with perfect faith the following. We are not the final arbiters of justice in this world. You're worried that a killer is going to get away with it? There's a Rabbeinu Shlomo up there, you know? He also has his ways of taking care of things. Don't think that the world is going to go wild, which the world, of course, can do. But the end, God wins. Now, we would have broken through the gates, something that's a little further away, not as probable as our case. We might even reach a point at which something that's not so probable is going to look to us like it's probable. Until we will have cut and destroyed all boundaries. And people will be put to death for very little evidence. Ma'at omed. Omed means assessment. He's guilty. Lefi dimyon hadayan. And they will be putting people to death according to the imagination of the judge. Umachshavto, what's going through his mind. V'lachein, therefore, sogar yidbarach et ha-petach. God closed the door. V'omar, and he said, shelo yachtoch geder ha-onesh. We cannot make a decision on punishment. Ele kishohayu edim mi'idim sheim yodu b'vadai shezeh osa ha-maisa ha-hu. Only if you have witnesses who say clearly, there is no doubt about it, he did the deed below safek, no question, or below dimyon klal. We don't permit any possibility of a human being's imagination. That's all. So I was looking in a sefer. I think it's called Marche Lev, where I saw this Rambam brought on this week's Seder, and I'm going to expand it. I saw it in a sefer for truly a man who left a beautiful, beautiful Sforim, died young. He was Rav Elimelech Bar Shaul. He was the Rav of Rehovot. He was 52 years old when he died. That must have been about 40 years ago, 50 years ago. Yehi Zichro Baruch. He set me thinking. But there was something else that set me thinking. There was a big article in the Mekor Rishon, and then a letter to the editor. The article in the Mekor Rishon was about a gentleman by the name of Harav David Harrison. Harav David Harrison. Harav David Harrison, a year ago, year and a half ago, he taught part-time in a girls' school, and one of the girls accused him of serious sexual advances to her. What began as a result of that, man was destroyed utterly. He teaches in a number of places. He's written beautiful svarim. He's involved with Nitzolei Shoah. He, a prince of a man, but he's been accused by this teenager or a little bit beyond teenage of terrible things. He ended up 34 days in prison. His whole life collapsed around him. Once a pillar of the community, and then there ain't no pillar of the community after this. The only condition on which they would let him out of prison, and he writes this, is that he would have to agree to go every week, twice a week, to a therapy session together with the lowest of the low. And he said, I can't do that. I don't belong there. But there was no choice. So he agreed. He came to the first session like he belonged there like a Greek in the tabernacles. And he talked to the people there, and they said unanimously, you don't belong here. We don't want you here. 10 months of house arrest. The trial was supposed to take place about 2 weeks ago. 4 days before the trial, they call him up and say, we've dropped all the charges. There's not going to be a trial. They had interviewed the poor damsel who had been violated by him, and they saw that she is totally unreliable. Totally unreliable. Why it took them a year and a half? It was nothing. Her imagination. We're talking about a profound tragedy. Profound tragedy. And now the man is picking up the pieces of his life all over again. I'm sure the story must have been in the papers when it happened, but I don't know how many papers wrote about the fact that it's all was all nothing. I read his letter. It was this Friday in Makor Rishon. My heart was breaking. Now you see why I started with that Rambam. We're living through a period now of a rash of all sorts of women coming forward, all sorts of men. So Mamela, any woman who's going to say anything about any man, she is obviously saying the truth. And of course, you know, you can't in any way not believe the poor victim. So there are people are going to be hurt, and people are going to be hurt very badly. And you know why people are being hurt? Because we're hasty. We hurry. We jump to conclusions. We make decisions on the basis of assumptions and what seems to us, boy, that's for sure. And then there are so many people who have all sorts of personal reasons why they want to believe such and such about that guy. It's a profound tragedy. Is the tragedy something new? No, it's not something new. We're going to see right away. But before we're going to see right away, we're going to take a look at another quote from the Rambam, number 2 on your sheet. This is in Pirkei Avot. Everybody knows the Mishnah in Avot that says, have a don et kol ha'adam lekaf zchut. Judge everybody justly, rightly, correctly. Judge everybody litov. And the Rambam is going to explain what it means. The Rambam is brilliant. In Yano, I'm reading number 2. Have they done it? Call Adam the Kafschut in Yano. Kishiyeh Adam. When you have a man, Shalotei Dabo, you don't know im tzadik hu im rasha. Let's leave Reuven and Shimon. They were part of Levi. Levi is standing here. We don't know. You don't know if he's a tzaddik or a rasha. V'tireyu shiyasa masa, and you're going to see him do something. O yomar davar, or you can hear him say something. Sheim tefarsheyu al derech achat, if you would understand what he said in one particular way, yetov. He made a statement. It can be understood in one of two ways. Now, one way of understanding what he said was okay, was fine. And if you're going to explain it in another way, it's bad. Which one should you choose? I have two possibilities. The man said a terrible thing. No, the man said something great. Okay? So, kach oto alatov. You have to take a look and see that it is good. V'lo tachshov bo ra, and don't think about him that he did something wrong. Aval im yeh adam noda shehu tzadik mefursam b'peulot ha'tavod. If you know about a person, he's well known as being a righteous, upstanding, fine person with the good deeds that he does. V'nireh lo poel shekol inyonav modim shehu poel ra, and we're going to see him do something that clear that what he's doing is something bad. V'ein adam yachol achriya letov. And there's no way, very difficult to decide that it's good. And the possibility or probability that it wasn't so bad is not so probable. You should still judge him tov. Roy shetikach oto shutov, take the possibility which would leave him being good. Achashe yeshum tzad efserut, after that, since there is the slightest possibility that maybe what he did was good or not that bad, that's how you have to look at it. Ve'en mutar l'chol l'choshdo, you have no permission to suspect him of having done something wrong. And about this, our rabbi said, "Kol achoshed b'kshedim, anybody who suspects a person who is a fine person, and you suspect him of something, loka begufo, you're gonna, one will be physically punished for it. V'chein kishiyeh rosha b'yisparsu v'masav, and if he's a rosha, and everybody knows that he's an evil person." We see him do something, and it seems probable that what he did here was good. There's some far-out possibility that maybe what this bad person did was bad. The correct thing is, be careful. Be cautious. Don't take everything at face value. You know, a Rosha doing something good, Achash yeshbo efsharut l'ra, because there's a possibility that what he's doing is bad. And about this it says, Gam ki chanein kolo al tamen bo, even if he pleads that what he's doing is good, don't believe him. But any time we're talking about something that was done or something that was said by somebody and we don't know, and what he did is something that is not clear one way or another. It's not clear whether it's good or it's bad. A pious person will judge him Latov. Eize kotze shiyeh mishnei ktzavot. Whatever the wide range of possibilities are. Okay, so this is the introduction. Now we can go through the shiur. Here's the most classic story of all. We're just going to read through it. Is this classic? Yosef was yafei toar v'yafei mara. He was handsome of form and handsome of appearance. And it came to pass, Vahi Achar Advanam Elin, came to pass after these things, Vatisa Eishas Adonav Esei Nehel Yosef. His master's wife cast her eyes against Joseph. Vatomen, she said to him, Shichvo Imi, lie with me. Vayimayin, and he refused. I think that's a shalshelis over there, which means in the... when it's read on Shabbos, in the Torah, it's going to be Vayimoy. That's a refusal, you understand? A refusal. Vayimoy, Vayomer Elisha Sadonov, and he said to the wife of his master, Hey, Nadoni Lyota, Iti Mababait, my master doesn't know anything that's going on in the house because he trusts me implicitly. Vichol Asher, Yeshlo natan biyado. Everything that he has, he has given into my hand. Einenu godo babaya tazemi meni. There is nobody higher than me in this house. I am the one who's in charge of it. He trusts me. He has not withheld a thing from me. Kiyamotach. You. You're his wife. How can I do this great evil? And I will sin before God. She most probably didn't know what's going on with this guy. She doesn't understand at all. Who's this Elohim? Who's he talking about? Who's he afraid of? Nobody's in the house. What are you talking about? Come on now. Give me a break. Don't be so prudish, you know. Let's go. Vayhi kedabro el Yosef yom yom. This was not an isolated event. She spoke to him day by day. Velo shama eleha. He didn't listen to her. Lishkav etzlo, to lie with her. Lihyoti mai, even to be with her. And it was a particular day. He comes into the house, and it seems nobody's there. It was a yontif of theirs, and everybody had gone off to the local pagan and heathen temple, and she said that she has the sniffles, and she's not feeling well. She's not going. She's waiting there for him. She's waiting for him. That day, Yosef came into the house to do his work. Nobody in the house is there in the house. She grabbed him by his cloak. She grabbed him. Lamor saying, Shichvoimi, lie with me. He left his garment in her hand and he ran out. Vayonas achutza. She's holding his cloak, and he runs out. Vatikrolan she beta, and she calls to the people of the house. Vatomalem lemor, and she said to them, Ru, take a look. Hevi lanu ish ivri litzachek banu. They brought a Hebrew here to play with us. He attacked me. He wanted to rape me. This Jew. Boy, Laila Shkovi me, he came to lie down with me. And of course, she's all innocence. She's the saintly wife of Potiphar. And I cried out for help. What a story. Who do you think they're going to believe? Who do you think they're going to believe? Okay? Who are they going to believe? Vayhi kishamo. This is her still talking. When he heard me screaming, ki hade moti koli, because I raised my voice. V'akron, I called out, v'yazol bigdo etzli, he left his garment with me. V'yonos, and he ran, v'yetze achutz, he went out. V'atanach bigdo etzli, he left his garment with her. V'atanach, and she left the garment with her until her husband came home, and she told the whole story. This guy is not going to be 34 days in jail and 10 months of house arrest. Yosef has gone down into the pit. So here's a classic story. It's a classic story for all time. It's most probably as real today as it was the day it was written by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. All the circumstantial evidence is that Yosef is guilty. He's dripping with guilt. And she is, of course, the innocent damsel. And what do you think the people in the house? The people in the house, most probably they all believe her, but everybody has their own reason why they believe it. There must be a lot of people in the house who were very jealous of this Jew boy who's running the whole house. They're even enjoying the situation in which he finds himself. He's finally got his comeuppance, you understand? He can't know what's going on in people's minds. Everybody has another reason why they're going to believe. And listen, all the circumstantial evidence is with her. She has his garment. He doesn't have a chance. Yosef doesn't have a chance in the world. Nobody's going to believe a word that he says. And therefore, the only one who's going to be able to save Yosef from all of this is next week's Sedrim, when Paro will dream, and nobody in all of Egypt can explain to him his dream. And they remember some little Jew boy who was in prison over there. Classic story. There's more to the classic story. More to the classic story than this. You know, I'll tell you the end of the shiur. This parsha, Parashat Vayeshev, from beginning to end, is the parsha of the tragedy that comes from assuming things. The brothers at the beginning of the Seder, they hear Yosef's dreams. Yosef comes to his father, tells him, I was dreaming that we were in the field, we were gathering grain, and each one of the brothers had a stalk of grain, and all their stalks of grain bowed down to my stalk of grain. How were the brothers supposed to feel about this? What would the Rambam say? Judge him favorably. There are two ways of looking at it. One way of looking at it is, this kid has illusions of grandeur. He sees, he dreams some about someday being the great leader of this whole family and everybody bowing down to him. He got problems. He has real problems. He needs therapy. We're not therapists. Therapy hasn't been discovered yet. We're not therapists. But there, he's got delusions of grandeur. There's another possibility. And this is a possibility that the children of Yaakov should be able to consider. Maybe there's an element of prophecy here. Maybe this is not just what he's thinking about all day. We're smart already. We know that both dreams that he had were absolutely prophetic dreams. And they all came true. But that doesn't occur to the brothers at all. As far as the brothers are concerned, they are judging him completely as evil. They're jumping to conclusions. They're making assumptions. And on the basis of these assumptions, they are envious of him. It even reaches the point that they hate him. All assumptions. It's all in their head. It's all in their minds. It's unbelievable. A tragedy befalls a family because of assumptions. You think it doesn't happen in families today? It hasn't happened in families since, well, this is it, since time immemorial. Me'az ul'tamid. The assumptions. Maybe if they could have talked, and they would have sat down and discussed it. Maybe have a therapy session with Yaakov Avinu being the one who's the moderator. They would have heard Yosef say, I dreamt that. I never thought. I don't want to rule over you. That doesn't interest me at all. I had this dream, and I felt a need to tell it to you. I have a feeling that this is a prophetic dream. I want you to know. That doesn't happen. Assumptions. Do we need a better story and a more powerful one than the middle of the Sedra? After the, and I'm going to put it in quotation marks, after the sale of Yosef by his brothers, we're going to get back to that right away. The sale. the sale. It says that Yehuda leaves and he marries a woman. He has three children. She dies. Two of his sons die. There's one left, Shelah. And then this woman who had been married to them, Tamar, is waiting that he should invite her to marry Shelah. He doesn't do it. So here goes this whole story of Yehuda finding himself at a crossroads, and there is a woman all covered, seems to be a harlot, and he lives with her. 3 months later, word is brought to him that his former daughter-in-law is pregnant. What does Yehuda do? Hotzi'uha, take her out, v'tisareif, and she should be burned to death at the stake. He assumed. He jumped to a conclusion. He doesn't know how hasty it is. You know what else he doesn't know? That daughter-in-law of his is carrying the salvation of all of mankind. Mashiach is going to come from her. Peretz, Zarach, David, ultimate Melech HaMashiach. He assumed. Boy, what tragic mistakes one can make from assumptions. Jumping to conclusions. I'll tell you, I never knew you can do it, but my wife told me you can do it. I typed in jumping to conclusions, synonyms, because how many times can I use the word jumping to conclusions? The trouble is that all the stuff that came out from the computer, they jumping to conclusions, imprudent, indiscreet, irrational, I like that, reckless, thoughtless, madcap, ill-advised, frechnisht, I can keep talking about it. If there is a moment of light in the Sedra, it's in that story. When she says to Yehuda, the one to whom this staff and this signet ring belongs is the one to whom I'm pregnant, the two grandest words in all of Torah. Tzadka, she's right, mimeni, in public, he admits his shame, in public, instantly. Medrash says that's why he became king, that's why kingdom comes from Yehuda. The ability to take responsibility, to be honest and straightforward, that those two words, tzad kami many, this is a sedra that seems to be all darkness. This is one of the moments of great light, Yehuda. There are other great lights. Yosef fleeing from before the wife of Potiphar, that's brilliant light. That takes awesome strength. The Torah says about Reuven that Reuven suggested, let's put Yosef into the pit. And now, if the Torah wouldn't tell us, so we could have assumed that Reuven is just like all the rest of them. Want to get rid of this guy, Yosef. Oh, no. Torah tells us, bears testimony, Vayishma Reuven heard, Vayatzilehu miyodam. His intent was to save Yosef. He was going to come back to the pit, take him out, and make sure he returns to his father. Oh, the medrash, what a medrash. Ilu yodad Reuven, would Reuven have known that God was going to write about him, that he saved Yosef? He would have taken him on his shoulders and danced all the way back to his father's house, carrying Joseph back there. So there are flashes of brilliant light in a sedra. where from beginning to end of the Sedra, people are living by making assumptions, and they're dead wrong. They're not being Donald Kafschut. Now you can understand why the Rambam says that Torah cannot permit a human system of justice to be based on the possible, the very probable, the extremely probable. Reuven standing with the bloody sword over a dead Shimon, not good enough. Not good enough. You can't assume anything. I'm sure that each and every one of us in our lives has had either people thought about us or we thought about people, but we're not going to talk about what we thought about people. We always think the right things. Oh, but what people think about us. So the Abish, the Hupitan, you understand. Until you find out 20, 30 years later, but I thought you said that. I mean, I've had people telling me things that I never said in my life. Never said in my life. Never did in my life. But nothing bad, don't worry. Don't worry, nothing bad. But not so good. All right. A whole Sedra of people making mistakes because they jump to conclusions. How many more years are they going to question Binyamin and Sara Netanyahu? How many times have we been told in the last few years, next week there's going to be an indictment? Indictment bargain. How long does it take to indict? Sorry. How long does it take to find out what happened? The number of hours that he and his wife have been questioned. Sugar. It's unbelievable. And they're not the only ones. 10 years they investigated Lieberman and then threw the thing out of court, never came to court. Yaakov Neman, alav ha-shalom, who was the Minister of Finance, they didn't want him there. Within the first month that he was Minister of Finance, he was indicted. He had to give up his position. At the end of the year, he was completely innocent. Terrible. There's a problem with the system. There's a terrible, terrible problem with the system. People are jumping to conclusions all the time. I don't know how they don't get exhausted jumping around so much, you understand?
The whole world over.
The whole world?
Yeah. You know? England as well, and then it's
happening. England, I understand, because they're a bunch of Englishmen. But here, we're talking about Yidden over here and fellow Jews. I don't understand it. We expect it to be different over here. Anything you read in the paper every day, people are jumping to assumptions. I've got to find a better way. Yeah. Yes.
But there's a difference here. This is not an innocent jumping to conclusions. This is devious political stuff.
We know that. I understand what you're saying. We said that anybody who jumps to conclusions, you know what the difference is? I know what you mean. When the brothers jump to conclusions about Yosef, it's not obvious. Over here, it's so obvious. You understand? When Barak, Ehud that is, the worst failure as a prime minister in Israel's history, writes an op-ed in the New York Times about how terrible this country is and what a failure Netanyahu is. But another few failures like Netanyahu and we will be a world power, you understand? And he goes about his business. I don't know how he does it. Guy has to be made of iron. You know what? We also jump to conclusions. How do you like this? Watch, I'm going to blow your minds away. We jump to conclusions. Where is that? I'm looking for something. Ah, all right, yeah, number five and number six. Number five and number six. Really? Let me ask you, okay, anybody who's courageous enough to answer? Who sold Joseph? All right, come on, say it. I know what you're thinking. Say it. His brothers. His brothers sold him. That's right. His brothers sold him. His brothers sold him. Yes. And then people, of course, believe that when we say Anyam Kippur, at the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, Ela Esker of Asara Haruge Malchus, that the Romans put the 10 great Jews to death because they had never been punished for the sin of the sale of Yosef, Shandanacha, but that's not what it means at all. No Roman is going to decide what we're guilty of and not what we're not guilty of. He don't know nothing. Just like I think I mentioned it, I get upset. I walk in the streets of Har Nof, and there are big signs over there that we have to remove Charon Af Hashem, God's anger. A few weeks ago was the fourth year at site since the terrorist attack on Rehov Agassi, my street. So they had the annual gathering. So they had a letter, and it's in big. I think I should go out there while they're still there before they're covered with who knows what. You know, a Kalbach concert. So I'll take a picture of it. That we have to do whatever we can to remove God's anger. Why do you have to assume that God is angry with us? Why do you assume that? If you want to say something, then you could say, let's pray to God that his mercy and goodness shines down upon us. What do you have to be negative? Oh, there's anger over there. Let's watch out. Watch that anger. So you all think that the brothers sold Yosef.
Nobody will ever know. The text is...
What does Rabbi Gold do? Okay, now you're all getting smart because Rabbi Gold is making you smart. You understand? All right. So I want to tell you, the reason why we all believe that it was the brothers who sold Yosef is because from childhood on we learn with Rashi in the classic Mefarshim. But along comes the Rashbam. And after the Rashbam, the Malbim. A whole slew of Mefarshim. No. The brothers didn't sell them. That's not what happened. Take a look at number five. Number five is the story of the sale. So they said, take a look at Pasuk 26, Chavav. You see, Chavdalet, Chavhei, Chavav. Vayom Yehuda Lechav. Yehuda said to his brothers, Ma betzaki naroget achinu. What will we benefit if we kill our brother, v'chisinu edomo, and we're going to cover his blood? Lechu, let's go v'nimkerenu li'ishmaelim. Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites. V'yadenu al tihibo, but our hand shall not be involved in it. Ki achinu b'sorenuhu, because he's our brother, our flesh. V'yishmu. By the way, that's a pretty nice pasuk, you know. Yehuda could have done much more, but he says he's our brother. He's our flesh and blood. Vayishmu echav. And his brothers listened. Pasuk 28, the next pasuk, is the pasuk. And it depends how you read the pasuk. And not everybody reads it the same way. Vayavru anoshim midyonim. Now, they had seen from the distance, there's a caravan of Ishmaelites coming, Ishmaelim. Now, all of a sudden, something new enters in the picture. Vayavru anoshim midyonim, Midianites passed by, socharim, business people. Vayimshichu vayalu et Yosef min habor. And they pulled and broke Joseph up from the pit. Who pulled him and brought him out of the pit? The Midianites. Vayimkru et Yosef la Yishmaelim. The Midianites sold him to the Yishmaelim for 20 pieces of silver. Vayavu et Yosef Mitzrayimah, and they brought Yosef to Mitzrayim. Simple reading of the pasuk. Rashi doesn't learn it that way. Since the brothers had said in the pasuk, "For who let us go and sell him," so they assume that the vayavru vayimshechu, that word vayimshechu, they pulled him. Vayalu at Yosef and Abor, who pulled him? Who brought him up from the desert, from the pit? So you can really learn two ways. One is that the brothers took him out. The other is no. The Midianites took him out. The brothers are not mentioned in Pasuk 28 at all. They don't appear in the Pasuk. So take a look. Number six is the Chashbam. The Chashbam was an enikel of Rashi. And you're going to see a fascinating sentence over here. Another flash of light. Vayavru anoshim midyonim socharim. People who are Midianite businessmen pass by. After they put Yosef in the pit, they went to eat. While they're eating at a distance away, he makes it very clear, they didn't sit down to eat right next to the pit and they're hearing Yosef's cry while they're eating, maybe singing Zmiras. No. While they sat down to eat bread, they were a bit distant from the pit. They're not going to sit over there and eat on Yosef's blood. They were waiting for that caravan of Ishmaelites whom they saw. They're waiting for them to come closer, so they'll sell them to the Ishmaelim. Before the Yishmaelim even arrived, Midyanim went by. They heard cries coming from the pit. Another caravan. They saw him in the pit. The Midyanim are the ones that drew him. And the Midyanim sold him to the Yishmaelim. Be a shlom, and it's possible to say, Shaha'achim lo yodu, they didn't know at all what happened to Yosef.
Reuven clearly didn't know.
Yes, so he says, not only Reuven didn't know, brothers also didn't know. It's a little different way to learn it, but it's the Rashbam. So you see, I just wanted to point out that we've been making assumptions all along. And, you know, Rashi is a pretty good one to depend on for an assumption. But wait, things are not clear, black and white. It's not so simple. Especially when we're talking about Shiftei Kor. Brothers, yes. You have to stand up and you have to speak up and you have to, that's all. There were snakes and scorpions in the pit. What don't you know? Yes. They were what? They were not endangering his life? Yes, so? So in other words, you say that they're guilty simply by virtue of the fact that they put him into the pit. But maybe they didn't know that there were snakes and scorpions in the pit. They just saw a pit. They just know it was pretty deep. They couldn't see. They didn't see a thing. Why do you have to assume? Why do you jump to conclusions? Ein bo mayim. There's no water in it. How do you, don't just, you assume. Today, The word assume is a dirty word in this year. You understand? So wait a minute. So there's Rashi's commentary, and there's the Rashbam.
They were cruel to Yosef.
Huh? They were not.
They were cruel.
We're not giving them a mafta yoina, you understand, and giving them a dinner in honor of the brothers, you know, the Keset Torah award. But the question is, did they do the deed or didn't they do the deed? And if they did the deed, then nobody knows what would have happened when they came back there. Maybe Reuven would have gotten there before everybody else and have gotten them out. Things could have changed. Anything could have happened. All that I wanted to point out is, just like everybody in the Sedra jumps to conclusions and makes assumptions.
Okay, I'm confused because I had heard they sold them and bought shoes.
No. You know who said they bought them and sold shoes? The Roman emperor. That's what it says in the davening on Yom Kippur. So you were not wrong, but you certainly weren't right. I mean that in a nice way. In other words, he's saying that these Jews, you understand, sold their brother for a pair of shoes. Even though, wait a minute, you're gonna listen to the Haftorah. You're gonna listen to the Haftorah this Shabbos, and it says there about Al Mikram Ba Kesef Tzadik the Evyon Bavur Na'alayim, so you're gonna get all confused. So all right, it's good to be confused, because when you're confused, it means that you have to learn a lot more in order to understand. The only point that I want to make is the following. Nothing's simple here. Nothing is that simple. If until today, December, what's today, the 5th? 5th. Until December 5th, 2000, Yudches Kislev, the 18th day of Kislev, 5,778, you believed that the brothers had sold Yosef. Now you're not so sure anymore. Okay, that's all I wanted to accomplish. That means the brothers jumped to conclusions and make assumptions. Yehuda immediately assumed nothing. She's pregnant. Take her out and burn her at the stake. Unbelievable. His only, the beauty is that as quickly as he assumed that she's guilty and he says, he says, Tzadka, Mimeni, she's right. That took courage. The courage to say publicly, I made a mistake. What courage that is. If only we could have a few more, I don't know, a few more, just have a few people who'll say we made a mistake. Sorry, Netanyahu was not Satan. I mean, she's not Rachel Imenu, but she's not so bad. And Binyamin Netanyahu is Binyamin Yedid Hashem, you know. We're living in a world. It's so difficult to see things clearly. And if you can see a bit clearly, you're ahead of the game. An entire Sedra devoted, as I see it now. By the way, I never saw it before. Thank God, Shehigati, that I arrived at this age, that I'm finally able to see the whole Sedra. This is a Sedra of people making assumptions, jumping to conclusions. Yes.
What about this illegal immigrant in America who killed, they said he killed this woman, and the court said he's not guilty. And everything pointed to his guilt, that he was there and he shot her. Okay.
You know, I don't know the story. But I trust you that the story is true. In other words, there are moments at which the justice system, well, they did it with this Rabbi Harrison. The question is, what took so long to get there? Why does he and his whole family and all of his friends, and listen, things have to be weighed very carefully, because the women seem to be all excited about saying that they were attacked and who knows what. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. Anyway, the important thing is you have to know that the Torah system is a Torah system of clarity, and therefore, as far as human beings are concerned, the Rambam says, and it's a beautiful Rambam, the way he explains such a strange halacha, Reuven with a dripping knife and Shimon dead. To explain that, you have to be brilliant, you have to be the Rambam. Torah had to close the door before assumptions, before probabilities or possibilities. Torah gave us the permission only to judge on the basis of what we have the right to assume according to Torah is absolute truth.